Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello. Oh, the days are getting shorter. The nights are getting longer because we're going to lose daylight savings times pretty soon. I'm so glad you're joining me, though, because my goodness, we're going to be talking about a novel, The Deadbeat Killer. Now, this is a Charles Casey novel by Michael Oldham, and I'll tell you, this is something that when I was reading it, I was really surprised. And if you enjoy mysteries, if you enjoy finding out about psychological patternings of people, etc., this is a book that would be of interest to you. And you know, now that the nights are getting longer, and maybe if you, like me today, experienced a power outage, you want to be able to reach for something that can keep you occupied until the power goes back on, the lights go back on. Well, this is a book that's perfect for those cold, windy nights like we are having here in the Pacific Northwest, where the temps are dropping, and cozying up to a book that keeps you in suspense is just the perfect solution for a power outage evening. Well, at least I hope you have a flashlight. That is what happens. Michael Oldham, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome to the show. And you reminded me you were been on my show before with your other works that you've done, and yes, you know, you'll have to refresh me on the Valentino stories.
Well, the Valentino formula is my first novel. It came out in 2011, and I had the pleasure of bringing on your show to be interviewed about that novel. It was a suspense thriller novel, actually, when I was talking to you, I was just telling you, Donna, before we went on air, I was probably already writing the Deadbeat Killer novel because it took so many years to write it because I do have a day job.
Wow. This is something that I think people that are listening might be interested in knowing, where there's always something that's a stimulus for a writer. And for the Valentino book, what was the stimulus for that before you wrote this, The Deadbeat Killer?
Well, the Valentino formula came into existence because I was attending these Hollywood revival-type meetings. There's various clubs that are devoted to the golden age of Hollywood, old Hollywood, as in silent movies.
Oh, yes.
And my friend Judy Artunian, a co-author on some of my Hollywood-related nonfiction books, was taking me to these clubs every month, this one club in particular. And I noticed a fascination. These club members were really intensely fascinated with silent stars, Chaplin, Keaton, Harold Lloyd, Lillian Gish, all these names. I didn't know until Judy introduced me to them and the clubs. And I said, these guys would give anything to talk to the old silent stars that are long past dead. And I came up with the idea of, what if there was a formula out there that involved murder to bring back Rudolph Valentino, the most famous Hollywood romantic lead in the silent period. And he was a pure silent star, Donna. He died before the talkies came into existence.
Mm-hmm.
So he was untouched by this sound of movies.
Yes, and that when you think about Valentino, and there may be some people not aware of him, especially younger generations, but he was the heartthrob for millions of women that, when they would see him on screen, he was very handsome. And to be able to do the silent screens, and he just represented something to women that fulfilled, you might say, their fantasies, the aspect of the Arabian environment, the mystique that goes along with it. There were so many things that he portrayed in. and he died so very, very young.
Yes, I think it was, I believe it was Mary Pickford who said, it was either her or Frances Marion, the screenwriter, who passed Valentino on a studio lot, and she said, I turned around to see if he was good-looking as I thought he was, and then I turned around again for insurance, and yes, he was that good-looking.
Now, the deadbeat killer. Now, this has taken you a while to come out with. When this started to affect you, this inspiration, this is a very complex character, Charlie.
Yes, he's a very
complex character. What was it that tickled your memory keys to say, this is something I think can really develop into a story, which it obviously has, because this is not something that I have come across in this particular, let's say, setup, but you give such a deep insight to so many of the people, whether they're police officers or they're people that are involved, engaged in drug activities, that type of thing. All of this in prostitution, all of this that you bring out, this took you quite a while to get the, what I would say, the realities of the worlds that they live in.
Yes, I did. I'm trying to, I really have no answer I believe, memory serves. I wrote this over a 13-year period. It took me 2 years to polish it. But I do believe in the beginning it was going to be a simple case of a killer seeking revenge on absentee fathers because he grew up with one. But Donna, I have no interest in writing a novel about a serial killer. However, I do remember when I started to type out this novel, it literally changed into what it is today. I literally changed the main character, Charlie Casey, into a sympathetic figure. Now, he's a contract killer, and my challenge was, would my 83-year-old aunt like Charlie? How do you get somebody like my aunt to like a killer? So, yeah, that was the challenge of the book, and I that's the only reason I sent it out to my aunt, my mom, a friend or two, because the only question I asked them after the first 10 chapters or so was written, I said, do you like Charlie Casey? And every one of them said, I like Charlie Casey. So I knew I had accomplished it.
And that is an interesting perspective. I don't think I've ever, with all of the interviews I've done, I don't think I've ever heard anyone wanting to ask a person, what do you like my character? Because you have so many characters in your book, The Deadbeat Killer. This is something you bring in questions. Because Charlie Casey, as you have just said, is a hitman. Now, we have watched a number, I'm sure there's so many people in my audience that are fans of Charlie Bronson. Charles Bronson is just an incredible actor, and his persona, his facial expressions, everything. And he's the bad guy that's the good guy that has ethics, that has values, that just doesn't put up with any garbage from anybody. And he's what we call the hero. And, of course, you know, we have so many other persons, Clint and so many others that have portrayed characters seemingly of that disposition. And yet you added something here to it with all of the different characters. One of the characters is Pixie or Bixie,
Bixie,
B-I-X-I-E. And I liked Bixie from the very moment that I started reading about her, and I had a very deep sense of compassion for her. But that compassion, even by the time the book was finished, deepened even more. And Charlie had a deep association with that. And that in and of itself is a psychological twist that I don't think many people would expect.
Right. I don't even remember how I came up with this, that I walk you into a setup that basically shows you how Charlie Casey, from word one, he's on a contract hit. He's going out to fulfill a killing contract or a killing gig. And I really don't know how I bring this up, but he goes to make the hit and he accidentally kills Dixie, a woman of the street. And one thing led to another. He takes her laptop, and then when he opens up the laptop sometime later, a couple chapters later, he reads the story of Dixie Brown, and anger develops in him. And plus, he's a mess because he killed a lady, which goes against all his rules. He only kills men and he only kills bad guys when he goes out on contract hit. So Charlie's world flipped upside down, and he needed to redeem himself for Dixie Brown.
Being of that environment, there are certain persons that are, I'll call, colleagues in crime. Some that he has saved their lives, others that have ended up in prison, but there is this bond among them that goes back a long way. And that is something that many times people will have bonds that will last a lifetime. And then you bring in the Detective Daniels. Daniels is a man, he's an older guy, and he is so street savvy. Mm-hmm. And he has youngsters, I'll call them youngsters because I think that's what he'd call them, youngsters that have gotten a lot of education, but they have no street smarts whatsoever.
Right.
And this is something that is very frustrating to him. Yet at the same time, he knows that it's necessary, because if you don't train the younger ones, how are they going to know how to survive? And he figures things out, and his determination to get at the truth and to the various things that occur. And it's just so intriguing because of the, again, I'll bring up the psychological patternings of people. He reads people very, very well. He sizes them up very, very quickly. And he is in the dark underbelly of life day in and day out. And this is something that I think you bring out very well. And I know before we started talking this evening, I was asking you if you had worked in an environment with law enforcement in any way. And you said that you knew someone that had an awareness of that environment, and you would often share your thoughts with him and he would give you some feedback. Now, this is something that lots of times people, when they're writing, they find that they have to explore certain arenas. As you were putting this book together, because this did not come out real quickly, but as you were putting it together, did you find that it was easy for you to get the research you needed, that there would be those people that would be open about certain scenarios? What, for example, what a police officer would face if he was, you know, in a situation that was going to require him looking for what other people could not see, for example. And being a detective is quite challenging.
Yes. Donna, I would consult my lifelong best friend, Dan. The detective is actually named after him, Daniel. Daniel Harris is named after my lifelong best friend. He is a retired sheriff, sergeant, investigator. He would guide me on things. Some things I... If I took a little liberties, it was me that took liberties, but on police procedure. But, oh, for instance, I remember one time asking Dan, hey, if the LAPD detective has to go to Palm Springs, does he have to now let the Palm Springs detective take over the murder investigation or that part of it? And Dan had had given me that answer. And those kinds of things, you know, using a silencer on a gun or a suppressor or, yeah, it's nice to be able to have friends that know some things. But what the key is, when you write a novel, again, going back to my aunt, I don't think she wants to get into the police procedural minutiae. You need to dole that out very judiciously to keep the story moving forward, because Charlie is the snake that has to weave through almost every paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, or the story has to move through every paragraph. So, you got to be careful on how much, you know, the reader wants to know about police procedure, certainly, but not too much. That gets in the way of their enjoyment of the story.
The investigation, Bixie being a very significant part, Daniels being the detective, and then there's a woman, Laura, that has something to do with Charlie's history that comes into the picture, and that's quite a section in the book. The aspect of location, now you're in Southern California, so you mm-hmm. know certain areas because mm-hmm. you lived in those or have been aware of them. When you were picking the location and you were dealing with the cartels, mm-hmm. and the cartels, not unlike the mafias, and they have their own language, and they're not something to fool around with, and we all are very much aware of that. And people that are not just perhaps are fortunate because they don't know, but mm-hmm. it is something that. Did you find that you were doing investigation into cartels as well?
For this book, I did not reach too deeply into cartels. What you're referencing is there's a cartel enforcer named Laredo in the book.
Mm-hmm.
He's quite a menacing character. He hires Charlie on certain jobs, but he's a really bad guy, really mean, nothing redeeming. And, you know, Charlie is being hunted by the police. He's upset his client, which is Laredo, the cartel enforcer. And he's got an associate who's blackmailing him. Donna, my point is, not to bore the reader with the whole plot of the book, but my point is, if you're a novelist out there, I truly believe this. You have to put Charlie not in a mess, but in a blanking mess to up the ante of the intensity of the novel. And it has to be natural. So Charlie's in a quite a mess in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got to get out of various messes with the police, with the blackmailer, with the cartel boss. But yes, no, I did not have to research too much. A lot of the research I do, I put it all in the bottom of the document that I'm working on, and it becomes a library, and I can refer back. I probably have read, several articles, let's say, on drug cartel enforcers. But you just use a very small pinch of your knowledge, but it gives you a comfort level to write about it because you've already done the research. So you're more comfortable on writing a single line out of three articles that you've read.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was a bit perplexed for a while you made the title The Deadbeat Killer. But there was something very logical about choosing that word deadbeat, because mm-hmm. it's... sounds like a contradiction, being a deadbeat and being mm-hmm. a killer. It gives a particular idea, but Charlie Casey is entirely different from the title. So there's yeah. also that little bit of a mystery that comes about, and it is quite a special story.
Yes, as you read through the book, you probably formulate why the book is called The Deadbeat Killer, and I guess I'll leave that alone. But I wanted I didn't make a catchy title. That was the title from day one. I don't believe I had any other title. And, of course, the title is up to the publisher. So when I got when I signed my publishing contract, I hoped and prayed that the publisher would keep the title because I'm not in charge of it anymore. And so luckily the publisher went with the suggested title that I suggested.
Mm-hmm. And there's a good reason for it. So people would have to read the book to find out what the basis of the reasoning is. Now, it took you quite a while to put the book together. Mm-hmm. And because, like you said, you're working at a day job and there were many, many different aspects that you had to work with. When you were posing the question in the early part of the book that Charlie was even asking himself, what made all of us possible? What made me possible? In other words, this is a man that yet, yes, he is a contract killer, but he questions, why did I do this? Why did I do this? And he'd been asking that question for quite a while, hadn't he?
Yes, he's 53. He's a burned-out contract killer, as you had referenced with Charles Bronson. He's a burned-out contract killer. And at 53, he's asking himself, what made me possible? He's reevaluating his life choices, and he's looking back to find out how he became who he was. And I think, Donna, I think we all do that throughout our lives at certain stages. We say, what got us here? Certainly our life choices, but also things are thrown at us through life through no cause of ourselves, and we have to deal with them. So you put together pieces of a puzzle. Some of them you made the choice. Charlie made the choice to become a contract killer, but he had an absentee father. He's reevaluating how that's affected him. He's had a lost love, like you said, Laura Christian Hadley. He's got a lost love that's needs closure. And he at 53 is trying to find himself, like what brought him here. And I think me personally, I do that. I say, what brought me here today? Why do we do this? Why do I do this? I believe because by doing so, you can go forward in a more purposeful manner and plot your course of your life in a better manner.
I think it's good when we can ask questions like that. I think that is something that most of us were encouraged often, too often, not to bother with questions like that. But I think it's that type of questioning enables us to open ourselves up to opportunity, to really see where it is that we really want to be and ask ourselves, is this all that there is? And, of course, it isn't. And this is something that people have worked with, I think, as human beings from time beginning. I don't know that has not been a question answered. I think that is something that many times it offers us the opportunity to realize that we have more options to work with than not. And when we don't feel like we have any options, then we hit a brick wall. And sometimes, again, that brick wall causes us to ask some questions. So if we're a little bit wise, we continue to ask the question until we get some real good answers. And that's what Charlie Casey has done. Now, Michael Oldham, so much of what you have written, it took you so long to get this second book out. Do you think you're going to make a series out of Charlie Casey's happenings?
Yes, I signed a 3-book contract. I'm working on the next Charlie Casey novel, as the series is called. So I've got the second one probably almost fully outlined, and the third one I've got some of that written too. I've got the beginning and the. I think a couple months ago I wrote the last chapter of the book, and so sometimes I'll jump around middle, beginning, middle, back, ending. And I think on The Deadbeat Killer, I believe I didn't change the ending. I added onto the ending probably four times, I believe. Nothing changed. I just added another piece of Charlie's life onto the ending. So, I think it's best to, at least in my case, I know that there's, you know, new movements out there. There's a movement called the zero draft. If you're a budding novelist, they say, oh, just the zero draft, just keep writing. Don't even think. Just start writing for 2 months straight without even coming up for air. I can't do that, Donna. I let ideas simmer. I'll be on my walk and I'll, you know, email myself an idea. Oh, so-and-so does this. And so I just let things simmer for a while. That's the type of writer I am, if anybody's curious about that.
Well, I think that's important what you're sharing, because there's no one absolute formula. There are those people that will say they sit down, they have a certain amount of time every single day without interruption, and that is, you know, they could be a mom, dad, it doesn't make any difference, but everybody around them knows that that's their time. And sometimes people aren't that way. You know, they may decide to write at 3 a.m. or they're going to go to a retreat and write everything out there. I mean, it's just so many ways that this can be approached. And
yes.
And as much as it took you as long as it did to get The Deadbeat Killer, and now this one is going to be a series, when you have this, it must be a good feeling to know that you've got this series, because this is something for you that is really quite an accomplishment, isn't it?
So when you get the publishing contract, and trust me, I had a lot of rejections before. I had a lot of interest in this book, but a lot of rejections, and a lot of people. In the end, there was two publishers that were on fire for it, and I chose the one I did, which, thank goodness, I did. I went with this publisher, Willow River Press. They're an imprint of Between the Lines Publishing. They have been absolutely fantastic to work with, very friendly and very detailed. And I think the process is unique to each writer.
It really is. And I think that that is so important for people to understand. That's what makes writing an adventure. And when someone is writing, when you are putting together your material, and as you said, you sent your books out to your mom, your aunt, and, you know, some friends, getting their feedback. And sometimes, I know, because a friend sent me his material once. His was more science fiction. And what happened is that when I went back to him making some suggestions, and he was going to send me a follow-up, I don't know that I ever got it. But he was able to publish, but he didn't. He said, I'm not concerned about selling a bunch of books. I'm just, he said, I've always wanted to write. He was one of these very creative people and just a brilliant man. And when I can remember thinking of different things that I felt that could have been emphasized and other things that perhaps were not significant. But, it's interesting how people, once they do publish something, and there's a lot of people that do self-publishing, which is, my goodness, that's just exploded over the years. There's over 100,000 publications that are issued every single year. And contrary to the belief that books are going away, they are not going away. They are not going away. People really, especially during COVID, book sales just soared. So, you know, you have these different patternings, but it's through writing many times people are able to express what they have observed, what they've found. And some people will say they just get these downloads. They don't know where they come from, and it's like the characters take on their own personas. You have all these different perspectives that writers have, and I think that that is marvelous. It really is. It is very much a creative environment, and obviously this is a passion for you.
Yes, I think a couple points here. This is not my saying, but I've heard this a long time ago. The best writers don't get published. It's the most persistent writers that gets published. And, you know, I had to fight tooth and nail to find a publisher for this book. And, yes, when I got the contract, I was thrilled to no end. And now going back to your point about writing, yes, there's a, it's, if you write a novel or even a nonfiction book, it's a secret little world you enter all by yourself. Family and friends go away when you open up that Word document and start typing the life of, say, Charlie Casey. And you're in that world all by yourself until the book is published. But it's therapy, too. I usually don't like this phrase, but it absolutely is true. The characters take on a life of their own. Charlie wrote himself. I just found myself knowing what Charlie would do or not do, like he was a real person. And same with Dixie or Daniel Harris or some of the other characters. They just seem to take a life of their own, and they have their own personalities. I never get them mixed up. I'm not one of those writers that, oh, what does this guy like or don't like? No, I always remember the personalities of these characters. And so I don't, it's a secret world if you write a book. It's all by yourself.
And I think that's a very good statement. So for those that are listening that are wannabe writers or have concepts, ideas, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, it is, as you said, it's that secret world that you enter into. And it is something that I've heard screenwriters say, I've heard, you know, in their own words, and that I think it's anyone who is creative that will say, this is my corner of the world that only I can occupy. And yet what they find evolves is that they truly are not alone, because what they are working with takes on that life of its own. Painters say it, you know, there's just so much to that. And I think you expressed it quite beautifully. Now, The Deadbeat Killer, people can go to your website and find out about your other books as well. And it's your name, Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, Oldham, O-L-D-H-A-M, book.com. Michael Oldham.
Books.com.
Yes. And Michael, when you come out with your next one, be sure you let me know, because
I will.
I think Casey is quite a fascinating character, and I love the psychological weaving that you do in the tapestry of the story that enables someone to realize that there's sometimes that side of what we would call not superhuman, but super good, that can be in someone that you wouldn't even think would give that a consideration, but it's there regardless. And that's something with Charlie. It makes you aware that sometimes what people do is not really what they want to do, but it is sometimes an escape from what they perceive as the realities of the world that they live in. And it's quite a read, The Deadbeat Killer. Michael, I'm so glad you were with me. Thank you for being my guest.
And thank you for allowing me to talk, but thank you for the feedback on the book. I heard this phrase a long time ago. When you write a book, there's three books you write: the one you think you wrote, the one that you wrote, and then the one other people tell you that you wrote. So I appreciate the feedback, Donna.
It's my pleasure, and I look forward to the next time, the next book that you come out about Charlie Casey. Thanks again, Michael.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Donna Sebo here. We're saying goodbye to Michael Oldham, and again, let me spell his last name, O-L-D-H-A-M. Go to his website, Michael Oldham. Book.com. We're taking a little bit of a break here, and then I will be back. I forgot to bring my tea. Anyway, we're going to take a little bit of a break. I'll be right back with you. More good things to share. This is Donna Sebo. If you or someone you know is an author and would like to be interviewed on The Donna Sebo Show or Warriors for Peace, please send a copy of the publication along with contact information, phone number, email, and website to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review. Thank you. The Donna Sebo Show is heard weekdays, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Callers are welcome to call in during the second half of the program at 253-582-5597. Please note that the announcement is made at the bottom of the hour if I'm not in studio, able to take phone calls. Warriors for Peace is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For current information regarding my email newsletter, programming, and appearances, go to DelphiInternational.com. For information on publications, including my award-winning children's books, audiobooks, and more, go to Mrs. Sebo's Classics.com. Oh my, the winds are blowing, the season is changing, and yes, it is October, and we have a fabulous event that is coming up that is going to be for the family, and we have Lorelei Shamayo with us. And Lorelei, this is absolutely one of the most popular and most intense events, I would say, for this time of the year. Welcome.
Great to be here, Donna. I'm so happy to be here for the BEPC Expo again.
Yes, BEPC. This is an event that's been done semi-annually for, what, over 45 years now?
Yes, it's a long history, strong group.
What changes the show has seen through the years. My goodness, you know, when you think about programs that have been around for that long and people participating both as vendors as well as visitors, what do you think some of the biggest changes have been with this event?
Well, we started earlier this year turning the event into more of a conference where we have invited speakers and a theme. We've continued to do that, and we've expanded. Just for example, we have 3 workshops, and this time we have 9. We have so much that's happening. So that's a big change that we've made. So we have more of an educational element as well as all of the booths and aligning that all together. And then we have free talks by all of the invited speakers as well.
Now, that's very important. We have an era here where anything that has to do with, let's say, the paranormal, the psychic environment, because we have evolved into an understanding about quantum science, and there's a lot which for so many generations was ignored. And here we have an event where people can not only be curious about many things, and of course we have so many fabulous vendors, but what happens is that there's open conversation about this kind of subject matter instead of fear. And I think that that is just such a huge, huge step forward. Now, this event is coming up October 18th and 19th, and this is being held at the Kent Commons in Kent, Washington. With this that has evolved now, because there is such a dynamic combination of the education along with the fun of the interacting with different vendors, different products, different services. With this event, what is the most, and I shouldn't say the most, but when you look at the whole package, it really has quite a dynamic, doesn't it?
It really does. So it's an opportunity for people to come for free and gather in community with people that are interested in all sorts of spiritual, energetic, transformational topics. They come in to have three free sounds journey experiences, to learn about our STEAM, which is the liminal path, to experience talks and, if they want, workshops, and to journey through all of the booths that are there. We have over 100 booths with people offering so many different products and services to support everyone, trusting more of who they are, being authentic, feeling safe to be who they are in community. Over 2 days, it's a deeply enriching, in many ways relaxing, and an experience that helps us be more authentic throughout our whole year.
With this event, there's the one aspect that many people are finding it's extraordinarily interesting to them, and that is the Psychic Showcase. Now, the hours for this event are 11 to 6 on Saturday, the 18th, and 11 to 5 on the 19th. However,
well, let me say the hours, because it's even bigger than that.
Oh,
now. So
okay.
You're starting to point out that we have the panel that starts at 10 a.m. each day. We also even have a sound journey on Sunday morning that starts at 9 a.m.
Oh, my
so
goodness.
So the whole day for everyone really goes from on Saturday, October 8th, from 10 a.m. past 6 p.m. because we have another sound journey in the evening. So from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Saturday, and then we start with the sound journey on Sunday morning and go all the way past 5 p.m. when the booth closed to 6 p.m. where we have another sound journey on Sunday. So it is a huge experience.
Wow, that's quite a day. So with the Psychic Showcase, now, this is something that when this was started, when you began this a few years ago, when this started, people knew about it, but they just didn't know exactly what to expect. And now we find people come out because they often want to come out early in the day, and they come out and they just enjoy this so very, very much. Tell us about the showcase, because this is open to the public. The doors, by the way, to the show itself do not open until 11, correct?
That is correct. The booths do not open until 11. They're 11 to 6 and 11 to 5 on the
right.
2 days. So the psychic showcase, or the psychic panel that we do, is an opportunity to meet many practitioners at the expo. We have usually more than 12, sometimes it's more than 20 practitioners that introduce themselves briefly, and then they answer questions from the audience. We're now having people write down their questions on paper so people can ask questions anonymously. It's an opportunity to hear answers from different panel members. So everyone gets to learn from all the questions that are asked as well as, and the answers given, as well as answers to their own questions. And people are feeling very safe, and they're asking so many great questions, and there's so much information being shared with everyone.
I think it's important, because what occurs is, one, people have an opportunity to see the different talents that people have. And not only that, but there is a feeling of being safe. And that is very, very important. And the communication that is done, it demonstrates that there are these capabilities that people have worked with and developed. And this is something that they, too, as individuals, if they're finding that they have questions about their own experiences, and in my observation and awareness, just about everybody has had something in what I would call the unique category, and they often want a place where they can ask the question about what they're experiencing, and it really, really can make a difference for them. It can make a difference in their life.
Some people have questions about what's happening in their life now, in their relationships. They might have seen something strange and unusual happen with their cat, and they want to understand what that is. Or could be they want to connect with someone who's, they might want to open their own gifts. There's just so many things that people ask about.
That is true. So we have that at 10 a.m. every morning. People come in, it's totally free, and this is at the Kent Commons. Now, what room is that going to be in?
We're going to be in several different rooms. The booths are going to be in the main gym, and then all the different talks are happening in rooms throughout the facility.
And the Kent Commons, it is very, very easy to locate, to find. It's in downtown Kent. Give the address.
Sure. That's 525 4th Avenue North, Kent, Washington, 98032. There's free parking. There's a big sign. You'll know when you're there.
Mm-hmm. And
I'd love to say a little bit about the theme and about some of the special talks we have this time, too.
Oh, well, that's good. Please do that, because liminal is a very interesting word that sometimes people, well, they may wonder what that represents.
Yeah. So our theme is having the journey of consciousness. So liminal, it's not a word we talk about that much. Sometimes people might hear the word liminality. So liminal is the space between. It's where we feel more concrete and grounded and solid, and we know what's happening, and the mysterious opening to something new when we haven't gotten there yet, and we've left the place that is so familiar. So there's so many different examples that we all experience. Birth is an example. Right, when we go from our mother's womb out into the world, and it's so different and changed. Stages of childhood, like adolescence, all kinds of spiritual awakening. Death is another process, or if we have a near-death experience. When we reinvent ourselves in the middle of our lives, it might be that we're changing career, or we're no longer satisfied and fulfilled by what we're doing. When we get a divorce. And then there are all sorts of other ways people find themselves in liminal space as well, sometimes intentionally for spiritual growth. People might do a shamanic journey or a plant medicine journey, or they do lucid dreaming where they know they're dreaming and they can guide consciously what's happening in their dream. Things like astral travel, of being in a new place, or remote viewing, of being able to see what's not obviously physically in front of you. Just all sorts of different practices that people do to grow the journey of connecting with our spirit and all one. All of that takes us through unknown, mysterious, liminal space. So we've created a series of invited guests. We have 15 special guests that are sharing all sorts of talks on these different topics. And I'll list a few of them. They happen all day, Saturday and Sunday. And we have so many other talks by our practitioners and vendors at the event. Some of our topics are...
The talks are really important. People are very, very interested in them. Now, give us an idea of some of the topics and subject matters that we're going to be able to present to people.
Great. Run through this a little fast, and I want to say there are three sound journeys also that are part of this that we've created for people as a way that they can journey themselves. There's one Saturday evening, one Sunday morning, and one Sunday evening. The other talks we have are Harness the Power of Your Dreams for Healing and Guidance, Healing Trauma and PTSD to Shamanic Practices, Clearing Invisible Wounds, Reincarnation and Your Soul Journey, The Hidden Mysteries of the Soul's Return, The Liminal Path, How Tantra Transforms Uncertainty into Awakening. We have a panel in Spanish, Exploring Our Ancestors, Reclaiming Enchantment, Restoring Practical Magic to Everyday Experience, How to Prevent Entities from Feeding on You when You're in Liminal Space, Three Keys for Accessing the Liminal State and Messages with Evidential Medium, Crystal Carey, Near-death experiences, what it feels like to die and come back from the perspective of a death doula, of someone that helps people transition. Healing body and mind with the science of vibration from Sikh lesson to the lands of India. Death, ritual, and approaching the threshold within. Psychedelics 101 for healing and personal growth. Psilocybin or magic mushrooms and the threshold of renewal. And Some of those presenters are also giving workshops. I want to just mention some of their names in case people know their names.
Mm-hmm.
We have Jeremy Chenbert, Tanya Diamond, Violet Serenity Moon, Harry Barbeau, Isla Barleen, April Lynn, Megan Haviland, and Theo Saints. And their workshop topics are healing trauma and PTSD through shamanic practices. And these are practical techniques that you'll learn. From Threshold to Transformation, a tantric workshop on the liminal path. When you're stuck in a loop in liminal space, shamanic tools for realizing and getting out. Meet your guides in liminal space via four clairs with evidential medium Crystal Perry. Wind knots, make magical charms for power and prosperity. All materials are included. Wind to heal body and brain tissue, trauma, vibration, technique healing, and moving into ecstatic states of well-being. Heartbeds, lullaby, a group trance experience for helping loved ones pass through the threshold. And then, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, Asclepian Temple Dreamwork Experience, connect to the power of the divine and astral projection as a preparatory path for death.
Well, there's quite a selection there, and there's all the opportunity. Of course, people have a program when they go in that, enables them to see what they would like to be able to explore. Now, let's give the address again for Kent Commons.
Sure. Kent Commons, that's 525 4th Avenue North, Kent, Washington, 9803. I'm going to sneak in just a few more topics of all the other speakers we have. We have 7D, Healing Portal Activation, Embracing Our Minds as They Are, Discover Your Spiritual Purpose, Magic, A Picture of Your Life, A New Way to Use Ancient Astrology to Predict Your Future, Everyday Energy Mastery, Quick Practices for a Clear Mind and Heart, Decolonizing Wellness through Mayan Astrology, Cosmic Ascended Numerology, Meet Zero, the AI that dreams, feels, and channels spirit, Breakthrough to Higher Levels with Your Spirit Guides, Developing Your Spiritual Know. We have talks in Spanish such as Todos Somos Sanadores, Past Life Regression 101, Holistic Health Hacks for Longevity, Vitality, and Incurables, The Game of Life, A Metaphysical Perspective, Your Path to Channeling, Ask a Psychic Anything, Spirit-Led Wisdom with Angela and Tussle, and Woo-Woo Conversation, The Language of Spirit and Mediumship, Becoming Sovereign, Living in Soul Alignment, The Alchemy of Wholeness, Returning to the Inner Diamond of Your Divinity, and Sacred Geometry, Introduction and Energy Clearing.
Well,
and the final sound bath we have on Sunday evening, it is special. Access through channeled melodies. So we have two experiences with instruments, and the other is channeled melodies through voice.
Well, it is a power-packed weekend, and the hours on Saturday, the 18th of October, 11 to 6. But as Lorelei said, it starts early in the morning and goes into the evening, starting at 10 a.m., the Psychic Showcase. Then on Sunday, we have also the 11 to 5 hour for being able to be with the vendors. And then there's all of these other programs that are going on, including the Psychic Showcase at 10 a.m. and going on until the evening with the other programs that she has mentioned. Lorelei, give the address one more time for Kent Commons in Kent, Washington.
Kent Commons is 525 4th Avenue North, Kent, Washington, 98032. And you can find out all the details on our website at pcexpo.org.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to it. You have a fabulous week. We'll be just really having a great time at this event that is unparalleled. Over 45 years, we have been serving the public. Thank you, Lorelei.
Thank you so much, Donna.
Well, you've got the lowdown on what's happening this coming weekend, the 18th and 19th of October. I wanted to also let you know about the guests that are coming up this week. Tomorrow evening, we're going to be talking with Deborah Beck. The book is titled My Feet Aren't Ugly. Now, that is a very unique title, and it has to do with young girls. And one of the things that, sadly, we've been hearing all too much about, especially related to social media, is how people, you know, young girls, they don't have a good feeling about themselves, and they need to know that who they are is significant and special. And she goes into this because she works with a lot of young people, but this is especially oriented towards young girls. And then we're going to be talking on Wednesday, which is always a double header, as you know, we're going to be talking with the Warriors of Virtue. Matt Bloom and another associate will be discussing this publication that they've put together. And you know what? So many times we will feel, because of what we hear on media, that virtues, honesty, integrity, quality of character, those essences just are really hard to find. But the truth is, there's a lot of people that embrace them, and they often are not recognized for that. So we're going to be talking about that and also sharing information that Matt and his associate have been very much aware of. And then we are going to be talking with Ksenia Merk. And Ksenia, she has been a guest on my show before, and this is going to be about a journal that accompanies a book that her husband put together that she actually made sure got published, called The Ghost Flower. That's the title of the book. Well, this is a journal that actually goes along with the book itself. It's filled with illustrations. It's just an amazing publication. And then on Thursday, we are possibly going to have a guest, but be prepared. It might also be an open mic hour where you could call in and chat with me if you so desired. And I wanted to let you know about that. In fact, the studio number when that is open, which it is right now. That number is 253-582-5597. And that will, you know, be open on that Thursday. And then we're closing out the show with Passage to Poros with Ed Tick. And this is absolutely a wonderful, wonderful publication. And this is all about Greece. You know, when we start thinking about traveling and going to different countries, there is so much that we can learn. And when we have the opportunity to be with the people and the culture, if it is at all possible, I always encourage people to become aware of the culture before they go, because it makes a great deal of difference. And I have had the pleasure of traveling to a few items, a few places in the world where they have, it's just opened up my perception of people and circumstances and living environments and so many things that you can become aware of. And when you have a chance where you can sit down and actually talk with people, it makes all the difference in the world. Also, I want to let you know we're working at putting programming together for my television show, and the 18 programs that have been completed are available for you to look at no cost, up on YouTube, and that's the Donna Sebo Television Show Special Editions. Also, there are other videos that are up on my website, which is DelphiInternational.com, and you can go into that section on my website. You'll also find the television shows that are posted there as well. And then I've had some people ask if I do private appointments, and the answer is yes. And you can go to my website, DelphiInternational.com, and you can contact me via email through that, which is fine, or you can call my office number, which is 253-582-5604. And yes, I am available. I do public work, I do private work, and I also do my radio and television programming. In addition, we are working on a new children's book. Yes, and that book is in the process. I would say we're halfway done with that. And that is something that when I was listening to Mike talk about how the secret world that you enter when you write, how so very, very true that is. And there's so many different subject matters and that you can engage in. And if you've listened to my show, you know the diversity of my programming is very extensive. And it just shows you how much we have the opportunity to learn about in this magnificent world that we live in. And for all of the ups and downs that we go through and the challenging situations that we experience, there is such a diversity that we need to be aware that there's always options for us to consider. And I find that it's so, so very important to have this kind of open communication about different subject matters. And you may say, well, I just don't like this, that, or the other. And that's perfectly fine. But don't close your mind. Go into your library. Get to know your librarians. Be around kids that have a love of learning. Maybe go to their science fairs. Look at what people are doing. And YouTube is fabulous because you can see so much on YouTube. I mean, the range is just A to Z and even more than that. The universe is full of wonders as well as mysteries, and there is so much that you can explore, and so much of it is free. So much of it is available to you 24/7. Well, I'll be back with you tomorrow evening. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And know something, you make a difference. You really, really do. And I so appreciate you being with me, listening to my shows, whatever the time, day or night, that you choose to turn in, and know that the latest 15 hours, 13 to 15 hours of programming is available 24/7 on my player, anytime, any place, anywhere. God bless. I'll be talking with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.